If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 402. This is our 2026 US Open Tips podcast. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's major golf action. Good morning, gents.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit gambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website, where we have my in-depth betting preview plus Paul's long shot preview for this week's US Open. Paul has been in the stats lab pulling together this week's data. We have detailed United States Open Championship event form, player form, combi sheets and major championship performance sheets. Plus new and old predictor models for the US Open action this week. All of our content is available completely free of charge. There's no paywall or registration required on X. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. If you're on Blue Sky, search for Steve Bamford and Paul Williams. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where this podcast is available each and every week. If you are listening to this or watching this on YouTube, please subscribe and please press that like button. We did get through that 5,200 barrier, so thank you to everybody that subscribed over the last couple of weeks. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I'll read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. This one is entitled Amazing Insight, 5 stars. By far the best podcast for golf tipping. The insight these boys go into is unbelievable. Can I just say a shout out for the Bogies and Beers Golf Society on Instagram? Would be amazing. At Bogies and Beers, our 6th championship is coming up soon at the Oxford Golf Club. Anyone keep finding winners, boys, so I can continue making money for more golf gear. So yeah, that's from Bogies and Beers. Their Oxford Golf Club event is happening soon. You can find them on Instagram. They are clearly based in the UK. Thanks for your time, Bogey and Beers Golf Society.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks for that. That sounds quite familiar, Bogies and Beers, Steve.
Like triple in brackets beforehand or?
Yeah, something like that.
I'm quite happy making a bogey.
Yeah.
If I make a par, that feels like an eagle.
I'd say so. Some players this week making bogeys will be good.
Love the segue. Absolutely love the segue, yes. Very, very true. Can I just mention as well, if you are listening to this on Spotify, we are getting fairly close, not brilliantly close, but fairly close to 1,000 five stars on Spotify. So literally Spotify is so much simpler than Apple. You just press the 5-star button. So if you are listening to us on Spotify, press that 5-star button. That would be much appreciated. Right, before we talk US Open, let's talk Canadian Open. Bud Cauley. Now, you got to love Bud. Injury problems. He's 38 years of age. He'd played 239 starts before taking out his first PGA Tour victory at TPC Toronto last week. And to put that into some kind of context, his last professional win, and this shows you how hard it is to win in golf, because Bud Cauley's no mug. He's had an up and down career. He came onto the tour as a quite a hot prospect, I remember, and did very well at a number of tournaments, a couple of, you know, second places and lost in playoffs and whatever. And then went through, you know, a lot of hell in terms of injuries and stuff going on in his life. His last win prior to taking out the RBC Canadian Open last week was the Hotel Fitness Championship, which they played in Indiana in 2014 on the Corn Ferry Tour, which back then would have been the Web.com Tour. He beat, this will kind of date this, he beat runner-up Colt Knost.
It's like a different era.
So it was good to see. To be fair, he was all over, and I mean all over, my eight-week analysis was Bud Cawley.
Well, yes, he's been consistent, hasn't he? And I get that from a from a kind of strokes game perspective. If you're looking at raw average numbers, then given the way that he had been playing, seventh at the Heritage was the number that
only one top 10, yeah.
Heritage, the rest of them were kind of top 20s, top 30s. So, middling without being exceptional. So, yeah, statistically, I guess he probably would stand out. I looked at him. I guess you'd looked at him as well, given the metrics that were coming out. But 50 to 1 for a player that...
55 in places.
55, let's not undersell him. As you say, hadn't won ever on the PGA Tour and... I'd had a fair few cracks there. It just didn't feel like...
Price is important, though, because it goes back to the fact, again, and let's take this forward to 2027, no one between 14-1 and 50-1 has won the Canadian Open for donkey's years. So there's another one, 55-1. And the guy that finished second, he was the 14-1 favourite.
Yeah.
So... I kind of chased the right areas, and I did end up getting a full each way return on Aldridge Potgieter at 66-1, which kind of didn't save the week, but meant it wasn't a full loss. But the thing was, I know for a fact that you had Jesper Svensson, didn't you, Paul?
Yeah, it's Svensson. I mean, he was in and around the action pretty much all week, wasn't he? Hit the front on Saturday and then did what my players normally do when they hit the front, which is immediately three putt from 20, 25 feet. And I thought he might still take the lead into the final day, but then he doubled the, was it the 17th on Saturday to leave him one back?
Good altitude sickness, right?
literally. He birdied the last to get a full place at 150-1. So that did make me slightly happier by the end. I guess with a 150-1 shot, you're not really expecting the win. So to see a player in that position, it gives you a little bit of excitement for a while, but the place is really what you were chasing. So the fact that he did manage to muster that in the end, there was a point on Sunday when I felt that he wasn't going to get there, which would have been...
I think from our conversations, there was a point on Friday you were already fatalizing him missing out when he was going quite well. So he hung on very well throughout the weekend. And I thought Potgieter was gone too. He had a nice rally on Sunday.
Yeah, is that kind of
cool? How many places each way did you have him, Barry?
I 10, so yeah, got chopped a bit. Yeah.
So you boys were cheering the Wyndham Clark bogey at the end then, which gave him a full place.
Sure, yeah.
I genuinely think that Potgieter's going to win a tournament before the playoffs. Now, he'll be defending in Detroit. And he's the kind of player that's going to go well at that 3M Open that they play at TPC Twin Cities. That's the one where Kitayama won last year. So I've got him targeted, Potgieter, for a bit down the road, because he's clearly playing well.
Yeah.
I think he was positive across all faculties last week, including the putter. In fact, talking about that, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to take you through the top 10 tee to green last week in Canada. So Jackson Suber at one. I was on Johnny Kiefer. He was second for strokes gained tee to green. He finished 51st, and he finished 51st because he lost 7.869 strokes with the putter.
Yeah, not ideal.
So these no putt players, it's just a week when they putt. They've got to just putt to, what, neutral?
Yeah.
And they're right at the top of the leaderboard.
Mm.
So one to keep an eye on, Mr. Kiefer. Big Yella, Yella Miraju, was third. Jesper Svensson, Paul's Bet, was fourth. Then we had Bud Cooley, Matt Fitzpatrick at six, Shane Lowry sneakily at seven, William Mao at eight, Tommy Fleetwood at nine, and sneaking into the top 10 was the Scot, Robert McIntyre.
Hmm.
But yeah, I quite enjoyed the Canadian Open. I thought it was a good event. I don't think it's a bad event placed before the US Open. Similar agronomy. Quite punishing if you do miss fairways to a certain degree. It's got something about it that's a decent event, I think, in terms of just warming up for a US Open type test.
Mm, yeah, there are bogeys out there, aren't there? And if you
and doubles.
Yeah, if you are offline, then you are going to get punished for it. But if you're not, then there are plenty of birdies. So it asks different questions to what the players will be presented with this week. But yeah, not a terrible warm-up for those that play it.
Okay, let's talk US Open, because that's why everyone's tuning in, let's be frank about it. Some decent bookmaker offers, I thought, this week, Paul.
Mm.
Boyle Sports offering 12 places each way as their default.
Yeah.
Bet365... as ever, via their Each Way Extra facility, offering up to 12 places. You can also choose as little as 3 places and get enhanced odds. So that's a decent facility to have. And also Betfred, they are offering, and they've done this for both the Masters, the PGA, and now for the US Open, they're offering a 12 places market at Betfred as well. Their default is 8 places each way. So what I'm suggesting is shop around for your options this week over in the UK and Ireland, because there's some decent each way offerings out there. We've got their new customer offers available via my betting preview. Now, Shinnecock Hills, one of the most traditional golf courses in North America. It was built in 1892. It's located close to Southampton on Long Island, New York State. And I know Barry holds this course to his heart. It looks an absolute beauty, but it also has elements of beast as well, because a lot of exposed greens. There's barely a tree on the golf course. They've all been taken away by the Core and Crenshaw renovation that we saw pre-2008 US Open, which Brooks Koepka won here from Tommy Fleetwood. So it's an intimidating looking golf course. Very close to the sea. And it's renowned for, I think the front nine is pretty flat, but the back nine is not only a links-type test. I struggle with what's genuine links and what isn't links, but the Americans classify this as a links golf course. But it's not technically next to the sea, so it's a kind of inland faux links. It all gets very complicated. But effectively, a lot of comments you read and hear from players is that this feels like an event that's could be being played in England or in Ireland by the coast or in Scotland by the coast. It's got that feel to it. The course itself, very wide off the tee. We actually got through greenkeeper numbers and physical details yesterday. The greens are 8,834 square feet on average. They feature Poana in the main with bent grass. We did this at, I will refer you to our research podcast, which was 401, the one prior to this, where we go into the details around trends and what we were looking for in terms of players, you know, different courses to link to. But yes, in the main, Poana, but there are bent grass on these greens. Some of the greens are kind of 50-50 in terms of bent grass and Poana. But what I find interesting here is, with some of these fairways, which are up to 60 yards wide, I think they sound probably easier to hit than they probably are, because you might back me up with this, Barry, a lot of these fairways are extremely contoured. So you'll have a left-to-right hole where the fairway is completely contoured from right to left, taking the ball away from the dogleg. There's a lot of unevenness on this golf course. And from what Rory's mentioned in the past and in some of the content prior to this, you're aiming for quite small segments of fairways to then get the right angle into pin positions. So it seems to me it's not just a bomber's golf course. There's a lot of strategy to it.
Pretty good take from what I've gathered this time around based on the widening of the fairways and what I've kind of digested on video. I guess we'll only truly see it in action when we start seeing it on during the, maybe a few more videos on TV during the week. You know, how maybe some of the commentators are playing holes a bit more, or comments on the players and how it's playing in practice rounds. It certainly feels very plotty, strategic to make your life as easy as possible in your approach shots. But when you're trying to get that optimal angle on those fairways, that's usually closest to where the most danger on that hole lies. So you're flirting with disaster to give yourself the opportunity for greatness. So I can't wait to watch it. It's very, very appealing. This, you know, it's kind of wider corridors there, but effectively not. And this wind as well, it's going to be something else.
Yeah. Let's go through the raw details. So course type, it's going to be technical. This is going to be very high scoring. Barry's already mentioned the wind. We'll go into some detail on that, but this is going to be a grind. Classical golf course, inland links, it's long. It's 7,440 yards. It's a par 70, only two par fives. Holes with water hazards in play, just the one. If Tony had qualified, Tony would have liked this golf course, Mr. Finau. Number of bunkers, just 155. I said that with sarcasm. Acres of fairway, 60, wide. Fairways themselves, agronomy. Ryegrass, bent grass with Poana, rough. Bluegrass, Kentucky. Ryegrass with chewing fescue. 5 inches. Now, what's happening here, and this is really interesting concept, and I think we need to take a little bit of note with this. When they go to a typical US Open venue, let's take a winged foot. Very, very thin fairways, 18 yards to 20 yards wide. Thick, rough. What tends to happen at a US Open that's set up like that is that it becomes a bomber's paradise, because you just got to hit it as far as possible, because everyone's missing fairways and you're better off being 360 yards off the tee than 280 yards off the tee in the same rough. But what also happens at a US Open like that, a typical US Open, is that the wider the miss, the better, because you're often getting a better lie going outside the ropes on parts of the golf course that have just been trodden down by the spectators. Now, to me, this golf course is the reverse of that. So we've got great big wide fairways. Then they've got a first cut, effectively. That is a strip of 3 to 5 yards wide, and that is the 5 inches of rough that I am referencing. The bluegrass, the rye, and the chewing fescue. And then if you miss that, you've then got a rather large chunk of knee-high to waist-high fescue, plus bunkers, plus rocks and all manner of problems. That's before you get to the ropes where the spectators are. So The wider the miss this week is, I mean, you've got to be missing the fairway by a considerable amount of distance to actually make it to the ropes where you're actually getting a better lie. That's what I'm suggesting here.
Mm.
So in a way, I think length's going to be, it's always an advantage. But if you are literally just bombs away here and you are missing fairways regularly by, you know, 6, 7, 8 yards, you are going to be in a whole world of pain. As you said at the top, Barry, making bogeys here is going to be a good score on some of these holes. It's the doubles and the triples you've got to watch out for. Well, I think Aronimink at the PGA was more a test of, that was like paper cuts. You could make bogey quite regularly, but the doubles weren't really on offer. It was just, bogeyed it, bogey. This one is going to be, there's going to be big scores on offer straight from the outset. Doubles, triples, quads. It's all available. And the wind forecast looks absolutely, what's the word I'm looking for? Intriguing. I'm using Windfinder.
Yeah.
And we're seeing gusts of up to 45 miles an hour on Thursday. They'll call the Gulf at that point if it gets to that, you'd suggest. But even for the rest of the tournament, I'm seeing up to 25 miles an hour on Friday, up to 30 miles an hour on Saturday. Sunday afternoon looks calmer. Nothing more than 20.
Yeah. But even 20 around that course with the exposed nature of it is still going to ask questions. But yeah, to your point, if it's blowing 40, 45, anything in that bracket, then that puts it on the borderline level. We'll see.
The course itself as well, based on sand. So I did mention in the previous research podcast, there's been very little rain in this part of the Hamptons, and I mean very little rain. March 3.5 inches, 90 mil. April 1.29, 33 millimetres. May 1.53, 38 mils. And so far this month, they've had 6 millimetres, and 4 of those were on Sunday night. So Sunday into tournament Monday. That's nothing. So you're going to see some of these fairways are just going to roll and roll and roll and roll. It's just how are the USGA going to play in terms of those greens and making it fast enough to be playable before becoming too fast and becoming unplayable?
Thursday's a tricky one. The other days look manageable. I mean, I'm in kilometres an hour here, but kind of like 20, maybe gusts up to like the mid-40s kilometres an hour. So kind of that's what, like 12 gusting to maybe 25, 28 miles an hour. That's more manageable. It's Thursday that's tough. And they're going to have to make a decision on how to set up the greens that day.
Yeah.
Whether they make them a bit receptive or they don't quite. They'll want to keep the speed up, but they have to be mindful of play continuing. Maybe they could, if they get too aggressive with us, they might have to make a call and actually pull players off the course. It starts creating a bit of a mess with your getting everybody around your first two rounds. So it's a bit of a dilemma for them, and none of us want, you know, we want to see play continue. That could be a bit of a draw bias. It's hard. I mean, and we're still 3 days out, you know, when the environment's windy, things can change pretty quickly in, you know, the next kind of 48, kind of 60 hours before play commences.
Mm. Yeah.
It's interesting.
I was going to ask you, Barry, because you'd love these kind of playing conditions. Man that plays his golf around Ireland. I mean, these wind conditions are right up your street, aren't they? So these golf courses can be set up to tolerate these levels of wind. It's just clearly they want that course to have releasing greens as a defence, and it's the US Open. So it's just how fast or how firm can they make those greens where we're not going to see balls oscillating on Thursday in winds that, you know, approaching 30, 35 miles an hour?
Well, they can still make them a challenge without having them super releasing. I mean, if you're playing approach shots in gusts up, you know, gusts into the 60 kilometers an hour, which is in, you know, 40 miles an hour, those targets are tiny. Like, they're small greens, small enough greens anyway. And when you're playing in that kind of wind, it makes the target even smaller. So if they're bouncy, like, they might have to pull them off the course. So yeah, it's a tough setup question for them. I love the challenge of playing in winds like this. I don't want it every day of my life. It's a lot of fun. And there's no massive consequence for me. Whereas these guys, you know, but if I'm playing in conditions like this, these guys are playing with a major on the line. So they have to get their heads around that and kind of dig in for the challenge.
Yeah.
The other thing I noticed about this course when we've looked at it and we've studied the videos and the aerial footage and whatever, these greens are really, really exposed. And on top of that, this isn't a US Open where you're seeing greens immediately surrounded by thick rough. Most of these greens have got, some of them have got false fronts, a lot of them have got heavy bunkering, and a lot of them have got massive, shaved runoff areas where balls are running 30, 40 yards away from the green surface down a hill into collection areas. And that for me creates problems for lots of golfers, but it creates lots of problems for golfers that haven't got a good short game. Because this isn't a US Open where you're just hacking out of rough and it's a bit carte blanche. This is a scenario where you could be missing your target by 2 yards or 2 feet, and next thing you know, your ball's running 50 yards away down into a collection area where when you get to your ball, you've got to chip it up a bank that's like 12 foot above you onto the green again.
Mm.
And I think that's going to play havoc with a lot of golfers that haven't got a short gun.
Yeah, or haven't got the creativity. And that
got it.
Lynx golf is all about that, certainly in tougher conditions. So having the knowing what kind of shots you can play and then being able to execute them could be the key. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, you're having the kind of the debate as to whether you describe it as a lynx or not. I think looking at any of the lynxy history results, the Open Championships over the years, is never going to be a bad starting point for this, because you need that kind of creativity. You need that nous around the greens to be able to save your par when it's when you inevitably miss, which is there's going to be a lot of greens missed this week. So you're going to need to have that within your armoury.
To back Paul up on that point, don't forget Koepka won this in 18 with a 68.1% greens in regulation number.
Yeah.
Now, you could argue that was under Mike Davis and the USGA, and they let the greens get out of control and blah, 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 blah. And I can't see the USGA making that mistake this year. But if this wind is really, really strong, it's going to take kind of that, to a certain degree, out of the USGA's hands anyway. Mm. Bogey avoidance number cannot be a bad one for this tournament, I think. Players that can avoid bogeys. And a lot of that would be down to decent short game. So all I'm suggesting is when you're playing with your models and statistics, I genuinely think that players with creativity around the greens, decent sand save numbers, decent around the green, just the basic scrambling number is something to really take on board. So in my mind, I don't think you can kind of just ball strike your way around here. Everyone's going to get into a situation where on a regular basis they're scrambling for par or even scrambling for bogey rather than double. I've ended up with six selections this week. How many have you chaps got?
I've got five.
Like 14.
Barry, are you still on the hoof?
40. I might have 40. I honestly don't know how to play it this week. I've become a fan of just doing win only bets at the moment. But with the odd one or two each way, I don't know what to do this week. I feel like I need 20 places. I might need 40 places each way. I think I might just do a few on the nose now where I see value and then maybe grab and running depending on how people are going, because I have a lot of question marks still left in my head, even though we know quite a bit about the course. But it's even more, it feels even more tough to put a pin in than the Open Championship almost.
I place three of my six US Open bets with Bet365. If you're 18 plus and do not have a Bet365 sports account, you can find details of the bet £10, get £30 in free bets, new customer promotion, plus a link through to that very offer with T's and C's in this podcast description. Visit golfbettingsystem.co.uk/365. That's golfbettingsystem.co.uk/365 for £30 of free bets with Bet365. I can see some big name ejections this week. It is a US Open. It doesn't scream, I must say, it doesn't scream Scotty Scheffler to me. Because if there's one thing we know about Scotty, he likes a fair test. And if you're missing fairways this week, unfortunately, some of the lies you're going to get aren't going to be fair.
Yeah.
And that might work against Scotty. I'm just going through the top of the board here. I don't see this being a DeChambeau test whatsoever, and he's actually drifting out the 30-1. I just think this wind, this golf course, all of different angles, it just does not scream. I would assume that Bryson's printing his irons right now out of the 3D printer. It's probably his eighth set that he's had since he's touched down on the property. He'll be trying to work out all of the different numbers, the gravity pull. I think DeChambeau is going to be scrambled from the start. So not on Scheffler, not on DeChambeau. I've got major concerns about Ludvig Åberg. I think he'll be very popular as ever because his numbers are just so good. I wonder if Ludvig at this moment is mature enough to navigate himself around a course where it's blowing 30 miles an hour, not get sucked into aiming for pins that he shouldn't be, badly being advised by his caddy, those kind of issues. So I'm not on Ludvig either. The one I've taken right at the top of the market, although 22-1, when I backed him yesterday afternoon, or yesterday lunchtime as it was, I think my tips came out around about 1 o'clock UK time. I just fancy Matt Fitzpatrick this week. We've said all year, in fact, we've said this now for what, 18 months? He's no shorty off the tee anymore, so tick that box. He's long enough to win a US Open, statistically. Don't forget, I think the number we used in the last podcast was, apart from Brookline, every US Open has been, since 2015, has been won by a player that would have been in the top 80 for driving distance on the PGA Tour arriving. Well, Fitzpatrick types that box, tick. I've gone 2 points each way. I managed to grab 22-1 with Betfred 8 places each way via their default market. But the beauty with Fitzpatrick is he's won the most on the PGA Tour. We're getting him at 22-1. He's won the Valspar, the RBC Heritage and the Zurich Classic of New Orleans with his brother Alex. So 3 wins. He's topping the FedEx Cup charts. He's topping the money charts on the PGA Tour. So you can't say he's not played great golf this year. He was 12th here in 2018. And then last week, I don't think Fitzpatrick was overly interested in winning the Canadian Open, even though he finished second. He was never going to win that event. But when he pressed the throttle over the weekend and shot 66-64, he probably couldn't believe that next thing he knew, he found himself in second place coming down the stretch. But he's just playing some really good golf, and these numbers really grab me. If you take Muirfield Village Memorial, we know how tough that was a few weeks ago. And then you take TPC Toronto last week. He was first and second for greens in regulation, respectively, across those two tests. So he's hitting greens for fun. And one thing you say about Fitzy, fantastic short game, fantastic scrambler, and decent enough in the wind. I think, was it last year he won the... it might have been last year, or was it the year before? He won the Lynx Championship.
DP World. It was the DP World Tour Championship he won last year.
But, the year before that, I think he won at St Andrews, didn't he? Won the Alfred Dunhill.
Mm.
He's won that. But this is the point. Decent record in the Open. I think Matt Fitzpatrick will be just fine. So I've got 2 points each way, 22-1. With Betfred, 8 places each way on Matt Fitzpatrick. Don't forget as well, that stat that we brought out last week, in the last podcast again, all American winners of majors in the northeast of America, apart from two English players, one being Justin Rose and one being Matt Fitzpatrick of Brookline. So the English have won a couple of majors up in the northeastern part of the United States. All the others have been won by Americans, so... Matt Fitzpatrick for me, 22-1 with Betfred, 8 places each way. Right, Paul, I'll come to you first. Where are you chiming in with your first selection?
I've got a couple at 35-1. One of them's shared with you, so I can...
Take us through the one that's not shared with me.
Okay. Well, that one's Tyrrell Hatton and...
Englishman?
He is an Englishman. And... I'm forgetting whether if I backed him at the PGA or the Masters. Must have been the PGA Championship because I didn't get the place on him at the Masters. But yeah, 35-1, and that was with Betfred 8 places and their default market. New father Tyrrell celebrated fatherhood by winning the LIV Valderrama event week before last. So very recent winner. I wonder whether fatherhood will just ease his temperament a little bit. Certainly winning round Valderrama requires some patience. We'll see if that's kind of or will change his outlook on go. I don't want to change Tyrrell. He's the kind of character he is and that makes him the player that he is. I think to win a US Open he needs to have a level of serenity and perhaps he'll just find that off the back of this life moment for him. We'll see. Third at the Masters this year, sixth here back in 2018 when Brooks won. He opened with a 75 that year, so sived his way through the field. In fact, he's got top 10s in all 4 majors over the years, including 2 at the Open Championship. So we know he can play links. You mentioned the Dunhill Links a second ago. He's a 3-time winner of the Dunhill Links over on the DP World Tour. So can certainly handle this style of golf. It's all down to how he manages his state this week. And we have seen him turn up to events, and particularly the Dunhill Links events, where he's just approached the week in a very calm, methodical and almost stoic fashion. Sometimes it's very un-Tyrrell-like sometimes. When you see him start to throw the toys out of the pram, then it's back to old Tyrrell. Look, I think the fatherhood may impact him positively, so I'm willing to pay to find out this week to see if that results in a first major.
That Sunday at Valderrama, he did come under some quite severe pressure from the chasing pack. And in previous years, I would have seen Tyrrell start chattering and jabbering to himself, staring at the caddy, staring at the crowd and starting to really seethe. But he did seem quite calm.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he started making a couple of birdies and re-establishing his gap.
Mm.
So that was a good sign, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he's got immense talent. So, and I think there's a major championship in there. If you would have pinned down a major for him, I'd have probably said it was the Open, but this is going to be as close as we get to a tricky Open championship
in the United States.
For stateside golf. So I think it presents an opportunity. As I say, third at the Masters, so he's shown some aptitude at the majors already this year. So, yeah, see how he goes.
Where are you, Barry? Who are you backing at the top of the board?
I put a couple of bets on last week when we were in the middle of our research podcast, because thoughts came into mind and just said, I have to do it before I don't or talk myself out of it. So I backed Goddard on the exchange at 70s. And true to form, I've found value, which is great, which usually means the bet doesn't work out. He's into 55s. I don't know. I don't have my own post-it note, but I never, you know, kind of had players I wasn't overly super keen on, but I did just like what Henley did in terms of how he won there a couple of weeks ago. It was a very gritty and determined way to just grab a win with the flurry of birdies to finish. So that makes me wonder if he's turned into a little bit more of a killer. And so he just seems to show up for these kind of grindy tests. And this is, this really is presenting as a grindy test now. So I also took him on the exchange at 55s. And he's into like 48 now. So great. Another donation to the exchange. But that's kind of, those are two I have there at the moment. I mean, Goddard is funny because he's not showing up really on any predictor that I'm doing. So much like he's deep down on like the wind and the coastal positive, but he has, you know, he's third in the Open last year, like we said on the preview.
Well, after winning the Scottish Open the week before
and the Scottish Open as well, so maybe he just hasn't played a windy tournament in the last, you know, 8 or 9 events, so he's not popping there in the model. So that's kind of bear that in mind and go with the history that we knew was there. He does have that piercing ball flight, which I think will be highly advantageous this week. And yeah, he kind of seems like a bit more, kind of a bit of a nuggety character. You know, he also just has that kind of dig down and can handle the wind. So those are the kind of two I have. I have a lot of doubts, and I'd also have a lot of fear about backing players at the very top of the board.
Well, people do like to listen to views. They don't just want a list of tips either. They want people to make a view and say, well, actually, this guy that's being backed off the board, I don't actually. Who are the guys at the top that you don't actually fancy this week?
I don't fancy Scotty to win.
Yep.
There's question marks over Rory's driver the last couple of weeks. He's changed shaft 2 weeks ago to a heavier shaft. He's changed the weights in the head. So that's just a little bit of doubt. And I mean, the driving accuracy has not been great this year. So he still is searching for that kind of combo that, and it gets him like into maybe 50% accuracy. So that could be a potential disaster looming. Though I do think Rory will go very well this week, even with that kind of question mark there. Ram's got that kind of nuggety character. I kind of see Goddard as maybe like a Ram light until he kind of proves it with a much bigger longevity in his career and success. But that kind of like burly, nuggety kind of piercing ball flight player. I think the thing that's got in my head is like when wind comes into play, that means that the odds that you're seeing there's just a lot more variability there. And that player could just get blown away by a bad 3 or 4 holes, let alone a bad 9 holes. You could just be gone from the tournament. So you're backing somebody at 12 or 13 or 14 to 1. Feel like you should be getting a bit more value when you're bearing in mind the conditions.
Can I just back you up on that? Let's just run through the winners over the last 5 years. Spawn 125 to 1 of the US Open. DeChambeau 20 to 1. Clark 66 to 1. Fitzpatrick 25-1. Rahm, when he won at Torrey Pines, which we all know was his favourite golf course. Well, it is favourite golf course in the world. And he'd been playing great golf that year. He was winning at Muirfield in that event that they were doing during COVID and then had to pull out because he tested positive. He was 7 shots ahead. He won at 10-1. But this is the point. It isn't littered with short price winners, the US Open.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think this weather forecast is... some of these top boys are going to get blown off the course. It's just knowing or trying to guess which ones.
I guess that's the gamble or risk I'm not super keen on taking and kind of why I haven't gravitated towards any of them. Because I can't separate one or two above the rest of that top eight there in the market to be keen to put money on them. So I think I might just avoid Scheffler, Rory, Rahm, Fitzy, Fleetwood, Schauffele, Young, Oberg. 100% not backing Bryson for this. He'll get, it feels like we might see another comedy of errors. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I'm kind of a bit mid and out in terms of the odds.
Well, I'm on Gotterup. Unfortunately, I'm not on him at 70-1. I put 1.5 points on each way with Betfred, 8 places each way on Gotterup at 45-1. I mean, you've mentioned it more, you know. The thing I love about Chris is this is basically a home major for him. He grew up in the Big Apple commuter belt, Little Silver, New Jersey. Now, when you look at Little Silver, New Jersey on Google Maps, it is right on the Atlantic coast. So, you know, this guy's been used to this geography since the guy was born. Yeah. He moved from Eastern Maryland straight up to this. So this is his area. This is where he's grown up. He went to Rutgers University in New Jersey. He won the Metropolitan Amateur, the New Jersey State Open, you know, when he was growing up. Then he moved to the University of Oklahoma. That's where he's based now. He lives in Edmond along with Victor Hovland. Now, anyone will tell you, Oklahoma, it's just blowing pretty much the whole year round. So I'm sure he's used to playing in windy conditions, undoubtedly. You could say that about Texas as well. But you just look at where he's won. 4-time winner on the PGA Tour. He won the Myrtle Beach Classic. Well, you look at that Dunes Golf and Beach Club. It is literally on the Atlantic coast. He then came across in 25, won the Genesis Scottish Open. As you mentioned, he then finished, was it third or fourth at the Open the week after over in Ireland?
Mm-hmm.
Portrush.
Yeah.
And then this year, first event of the year, he was negative. And this is the other thing with Gotterup. He shows he's got different facets to his game. He can win a tournament with the putter. He did that in Phoenix to your chagrin with Matsuyama. But basically, it was all strokes game putting in that one. Then he'll dominate a tournament off the tee. Then he'll dominate a tournament with the approach play. He can win in different ways. But he won the 26th Sony Open, Wailea Country Club, next to the coast. So three of his four wins have literally been on the coast. So he clearly likes this kind of golf course, this kind of test. And then you look at, I mean, I've used Paul. I've used Paul. He's very nuggety, as you said. He's a bit John Rahm, and he's not at all concerned about ruffling big feathers. And you can see this. I've used Paul's stats here. His most recent four major outings, bearing in mind he's only played in five, 23rd, 3rd, 24th, 10th at the PGA last time out. So he's a man for a big occasion. And if you look at that from an average score perspective, in this field, only Scottie Scheffler, Xander and Rory McIlroy have got a better average score in the most recent 10 majors than Chris Gotterup. And okay, I understand Gotterup played five, but you see where I'm heading. He's a man, he thrives in majors.
Yeah. I think growing up in those kind of conditions, it gives you that adaptability in how to put a score together based on how a course is presenting and what the weather is doing. And that, you know, proves out when he knows how to win in different ways with putting or with long game or with around the green. So he's got a robust game that can kind of take punches from different directions in different tournaments. I think he's a...
Agreed, yeah. He's got a game that travels.
I'm very happy I have the bet on that I do on. And even if it was... I think I could still happily and easily talk myself into it at 50s or 45s like you did if I was going for an each way bet. I think I'll add those in as I go, but I like kind of grabbing the value on the exchange. Value losers are a wonderful thing to have.
But look, at that price, Barry, you could just supplement with a top 10 on him or something, and then you've got the best of both worlds.
True that, yeah. Not a bad way to do it, actually. Thank you.
So I'm on Fitzpatrick, Matt. I'm on Chris Gotterup. Paul, you're on one of my others at 35-1. So you take the listeners through that.
Yeah, Wyndham Clark, who we've mentioned a number of times over the last couple of pods. We certainly talked about him on the research and preview pod as well. 35-1. I took the 8 places again, and that was with Betfred. There's some really strong price and each way term combinations with Betfred this week, so well worth a look. Got the game for this, Wyndham Clark, coming into form just at the right time as well over the last few weeks. Won the 2023 US Open, as we know. Fourth last year's Open Championship. That's easy to forget because he opened with 76 that week and then absolutely scythed his way through the field. 66, 66, 65 to finish in a tie for fourth in the end after a really slow start. So has that, bit of Lynx-y form to his name as well. In terms of current form, won the Byron Nelson end of May, third at the Memorial. Shot a 63 on Saturday last week to put him in the mix. Briefly got me excited. I think he kind of just trod water through to the final there. No stress. 11th in the end. Absolutely primed for this week, I think. Wyndham Clark has got that kind of character that I think could stick around it. Everyone's going to make bogeys, and we've touched on it a few times. Everyone's going to make, well, if the 2018 renewal's anything to go by, everyone's going to make double digits bogeys over the course of the 4 days. So being able to get your head around that, to bounce back when it's possible to do so, not to compound errors with doubles, triples and the like. Yeah, it just feels to me a Wyndham Clark kind of week. So happy to be on board, I think.
To me, his form right now is a mirror image to when he won in 23. And we have said last week, I think one of you was on him at the Canadian Open. He's one of these players that you just follow when he's hot and then he'll just fall away completely.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't do anything but back you up because I got 35-1 with bet 365 8 place each way on Wyndham Clark. I'm on 1.5 points on that. I'm also on another 35-1 price, Betfred 8 each way for Sam Burns, 9th and 7th at the last two US Opens. He was 7th in this year's Masters. So slowly, it's taken a long time with Sam, but he's getting his head around majors. And if we're looking at these trends where you want a long, this would be a first time major win for him. I think it's 9 of the last 13 US Opens have been won by players that haven't won a major. So he ticks that box. There's also a trend in there about players that are in the top 20 for driving distance on the PGA Tour winning a US Open. Well, he's in the top 20 right now for driving distance. Ticks that box. He's just there or thereabouts most weeks. So he's ticking a lot of boxes for me. So I took Sam Burns, 1.5 points each way. 35-1 with Betfred 8 places each way. Interestingly, he played this as a 21-year-old back in 18. He was a Korn Ferry pro at that point. I think he'd only played like 8-10 pro starts. And after round one, he was in 6th place. Made the cut. So, yeah, I think this course will suit Burns, who isn't the straightest off the tee, but his tee to green numbers and his approach play has been a lot better of late. So yeah, got her up as well, of course. And then I did mention him earlier on, 55-1. I mentioned him in that top 10 tee to green list. I got 55-1 with Bet365, 8 places each way. Tough conditions, coastal golf course, linksy golf course. You've got to put Scott in there, haven't you? So I put Robert McIntyre in. Bobby Mack, 55-1 with Bet365, places each way on Robert. What do you think, chaps? Do you think Robert's got a chance this way?
Yeah, I can see the angle you come from. With
second him. In last year's US Open at Oakmont?
Mm. Yeah, it's been a bit of an up and down year, hasn't it? But when he's pulled his form together and he has shown some aptitude at the bigger tests. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see how he goes. He could enjoy the conditions, so that's got to be a positive for him.
I've got one more, and he's at 90-1. So if you want to fill this section up, anyone around this area? I know that you've got three at triple digits, Paul, so...
Yeah, all of mine are slightly above that, but I can...
What about you, Barry?
Paul. Good.
Yeah, Paul's got three hummers at 100. And to be fair, let's be frank, this is the kind of tournament where you could actually get 100-1 plus winner. So,
three hummers, and that's being polite.
Yeah. Do you want to... Can you fill that gap, Barry, up to 90-1?
I grabbed another exchange, a nugget, Patrick Reed, 48. Like, he's going to grind it out. Don't think that man will kind of just whimper in the conditions. He'll just dig in and go for it. So whether he gets all the way or not is another thing. But I feel more kind of secure in that bet than Sam Burns at the same price. Seems to melt when the spotlight comes on him. So not yeah, that's a pot shot at Burns, but like he needs to prove otherwise when the heat is really on.
Yeah,
we saw last year in the US Open the putting does go for such an elite putter. It gets less than elite when that the max pressure is on. So if he does it, fair play to him. I couldn't resist it because it's windy. He's a previous US Open champion. He's won this year. He's got one of the highest ball speeds on tour, but he flights it so low. It doesn't owe me anything, but I was like, the price was stupid at 170 on the exchange. So I just grabbed some Gary Woodland for all time's sake. Just a few euro for shits and giggles.
I did notice, actually, next year's US Open is at Pebble Beach. Did make me think of Gary yesterday. My biggest price, Australian major winner. He's won at a very blustery Sony Open in 2020. Just remembering back, I'm sure we saw winds in that particular renewal at consistently 30 to 40 miles an hour. He's won on a Court and Crenshaw design, the plantation course at Kapalura in 2022. And then, of course, well, I say of course because you don't know after it, but he won the Open at St Andrews in 2022. So he's always been happy by the coast. He's also a major championship performer, ranking T8 in this field across the past 5 seasons for major finishes. Within our predictor model variable, he's actually, and this was the thing that got me. I built a model at like when Paul switched the predictor on at ASR. I think it was like 8:30 yesterday morning, Monday morning, and this guy across the variables I input finished 6th. And I thought, well, that's quite a nice price for a guy that's in the top 6 of the predictor model. His recent form reads 7th at the PGA, 16th at LIV Golf Korea. He was 4th after 54 holes. And then 5th, last time out at that LIV Golf Andalusia tournament that Tyrrell Hatton one that Paul referenced earlier. Cam Smith. I think if you want a player with magic beans from anywhere around, well, hopefully he hits a couple of fairways. Fairways and in, Cam Smith ain't a bad shout this week in these conditions. So he is my final selection. Cam Smith, Bob McIntyre, Chris Gotterup, Sam Burns, Wyndham Clark, and Matt Fitzpatrick. If I could have one more selection, Paul is going to mention him as part of his three at triple digits. Over to you, Paul.
Interesting. I think I can guess which of the three it is. So, yeah, I've put my long shots preview up on the site. So if you want a little bit more meat on the bones of what I'm just about to go through, then pop along and read the more detailed content. But, yeah, I've backed three at triple digits. The first one is Alex Smalley, who, well, when we talked through on the preview pod, I presented a 15-man shortlist of players that had the right combination of season form and current form and also recent majors form to kind of make that shortlist based on recent US Open history. And Smalley was the only triple-digit chance on that list. Kurt Kitayama was also kind of flirting with triple digits, but he's been quite popular in the market, so he's dipped down to kind of 70s, 80s now. But yeah, Smalley, second at the PGA Championship at Aronimink. That was his best major finish by far. And perhaps he continues this first-time major winner narrative that we've seen at the US Open this year and could go one better, potentially. Seventh at Doral, 17th at Quail, and third at Colonial around that PGA Championship effort. And I think there's been a bit of an overreaction to his miscut at Muirfield Village on his last start. Had put a lot of golf in, a lot of decent efforts up till that point, and perhaps the rest will do him some good. He's got some Coran Crenshaw form as well. He was fourth at last year's Bay Current Classic. The kind that I think could surprise this week, and he's kind of been one of these the player that's managed to gravitate away from your post-it notes, Steve, to being part of either your or my selections and card every week recently. So I guess it was small.
He's a rarity. Someone has escaped the post-it note of doom.
Yeah, that's it.
He's the one that ticks all so many boxes. Current form, playing great. Decent major outing at the PGA.
Yeah.
Last time out, yeah. Alex Smalley, yeah.
There's lots to like, isn't there? 110 to 1 still with the extra places and 125 if you go for fewer. So there's some juice in his price, I think, this week, Smalley. Hopefully he can find himself into those each-way paying places or potentially just push on and do a JJ Spawn. We shall see. The next one is, well, I've wound the clock back a number of years for this one. Dustin Johnson I've backed at 125 to 1. I see 365 have pushed him out to 140s in their standard 8-place market this morning, so that's even better than the number that I've quoted on my preview. But in that kind of bracket, 125, slightly longer if you want different each-way terms. He was heavily involved in that 2018 renewal here at Shinnecock that Brooks won. He was third in the end behind Brooks, but he was in the mix and heavily involved all the way through until including on Sunday as well. That was one of 21 major top 10 finishes that he's had over the years, plus another couple of wins in majors as well. 24 PGA Tour wins. It's easy to forget how good DJ was now that he's playing over in LIV Golf and, you know, he's pretty much off the bulk of golf punters' radars as a result. It's won three times on LIV and then over the last couple of years has gone off the boil. But what I've seen is some signs of life over the last few starts. So fourth at LIV Korea, fifth at Valderrama on his last start. And Valderrama isn't what I'd describe as a Dustin Johnson style track. So to see him performing there suggests to me that his underlying game is in pretty good shape. Twice a winner at Kapalua, Corwin Crenshaw link, as we've discussed, 2013. You might remember 2013. That was the one where it was cut down to 54 holes because of the wind. It was horrifically windy that week.
Yeah.
And, I just remember those images of trees kind of virtually bent sideways. He won that event. He also won there in 2018 by 8 shots. So it has some good Core and Crenshaw form as well. DJ's 41 years old. I think, you know, again, you kind of look at some of these players, you think, well, that, you know, they've gone to live, they've taken the money. We don't see him much on majors anymore, and they must be, they must be past it effectively. But I don't think so. I think there's still a player in there. So I'll be fascinated to see how he goes at a strong triple-digit price. The final one, another LIV player, actually, Lucas Herbert. I've backed at 175. 3 times a winner on the DP World Tour, PGA Tour winner too. And as I say, another one who left to play LIV golf. Got his first win on that circuit last month at LIV Virginia. He'd been ill and struggling with a little niggle before that, so it wasn't even sure to play, and then rocked up and won by 4 shots. So no issue in that respect. 8th and 24th since, so ticking over, but he's got lots of good wind form from back in the day to suggest that he could go well here. His 2020 Dubai Desert Classic win on the DP World Tour came in one of the toughest renewals there. It was windy. He won at 9 under par. He also won the Butterfield Bermuda Championship on the PGA Tour the following year, and another one that week that was in tough, windy conditions. You may recall he shot through the field on the final day, beat Patrick Reed and Danny Lee with a cracking final round in the wind. So I don't think the conditions are going to deter him this week. I think he's a strong price for an each-way chance and could just sneak a place at 175. And that's me. So my five, Lucas Herbert, DJ Smalley, Tyrrell Hatton, Wyndham Clark.
Do you remember not long ago, around the after the Masters, we all swore that was it for bets on LIV players? It's fascinating how it's kind of swung around a bit since the announcements have come. And
yeah,
like, oh yeah, no, I don't mind a bit of a LIV player now. Maybe they've got some freedom. They're kind of looking at getting back to the tour, and they're actually a bit more focused, and or et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going on in their heads? But
it's amazing how the gravy train looks like it's about to end, and all of a sudden it looks like players are actually practicing again.
Yeah, well, at least in terms of our psychology on the bets, it seems to have changed a bit. So something must be there.
Yeah. No, I think you're right, Barry. I think these players, you know, look, we can only speculate what's going to happen on that tour as it gets to the end of its current season. But some of these players are going to have decisions to make, or, you know, by putting themselves in a position where they are playing some top golf. And as Steve alluded to, in terms of the opportunities to play for world ranking points or for big world ranking points, some of these players have got to pull the finger out quite quickly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But, I'm certainly not as negative about some of the chances or some of the LIV players. Cam Smith as well, you know, to Steve's point, and, he's been quite popular. He popped up from what you describe as virtually nowhere to get that top 10 at the PGA Championship.
Yeah.
So there's something percolating.
One last point from me and we'll close it. Alex Smalley, non-winner, hasn't won on the PGA Tour yet, but is playing exceptional golf. I won't ask the question because it could extend the podcast by another 5 minutes, but the last player to win their first major who hadn't won on the PGA Tour prior, Danny Willett, 2016 Masters. Oh, just over 10 years ago. And that was a windy, funny old renewal, if you remember.
Yeah, it was a tricky one, wasn't it? That was the one where Spieth was ahead and then not.
all hell broke loose.
The previous one to that, looking at this list, would have been Keegan Bradley, the 2011 PGA at Atlanta Athletic Club.
Yeah, it can happen.
He might do it just to spite you, Steve. You never know. It's
Alex, and I haven't got a penny on him.
Yeah,
exactly. Actually, I've got that one wrong with Bradley. Before I start getting loads of emails and messages, he'd won the Byron Nelson in May before winning the PGA in August.
But yeah, yes. It was his first. It was his first major, I think, wasn't it?
He had won a PGA Tour event. So yes, Danny Willett, last one not to have won a PGA Tour event, and then won the Masters to get his first American major victory. Well, I hope your bets go well, chaps.
Yeah, best luck, boys.
You too, boys. Be good to get a win in a major, in particular.
Always good to get a sweat on as well in a major, rather than all your players missing the cut on Thursday. Or looking like they're about to. Hope your listeners' bets go well. What have we got next week, Paul?
Italian Open for me.
Italiano. And we've also got the Travellers' Championship, which I believe is the last signature event on the PGA Tour. So we'll see you next week for that. Hope your bets go well. And don't forget, press the Spotify 5-star button and subscribe to the YouTube channel. See you soon.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system, the golf.